What's up, you beauties? Welcome to High and Wide Radio, episode 31 of season 6. I'm your host, Jim Iacobone. I'll be joined by Jack Smith in about a half an hour or so. We're waiting on our special guest, Jason Martinez, will be joining us for the show. So looking forward to that. If you're watching us live on YouTube tonight, make sure you're subscribed and set an alert for our future shows. And if you're listening as a podcast, please make sure you're listening and subscribed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to get notifications for future episodes the minute we upload them. And our guest is backstage, so let's bring him in. Mr. Jason Martinez. Jace, how are you, man?
What's going on, Jim? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good. Just lit an incense. Just got back from the gym. Had a little dinner.
Oh, there you go.
Living it up.
You.
Let's crack open a cold one. Hold on, right?
Yeah, go ahead. I got a cold one myself over here. Yeah, I got a coffee. Yeah. So, you know, Jack's going to be on in about 20 minutes or so. So it's going to be me and you for a bit.
Cool.
But, as always with the Flyers, there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, the exit interviews wrapped up last week. Ivan Fedotov has signed a 2-year deal. And there's, I would say, I don't want to say controversy, but in Flyer fashion, it's given fans something to complain about a little bit, right? And I'll kind of dive right into this right away, Jace, because it's the most relevant news. And Fedotov signs for 2 years, $3.5 million per. Actually, 3.25. Your buddy Anthony DeMarco, who's also a friend of ours as well, broke the news a few days ago, and I want to know your thoughts, because I think as Flyers, as fans in general, but especially maybe Flyer fans, you know, we see something like this. He's making $2 million more, just about, than Sam Ersson, who, you know, just played 50 some odd games, you know, busted his ass all season long in the absence of Carter Hart. And you know, Fedotov comes over, he's here less than a month, and gets a pretty sizable deal. I think a lot more than a lot of us expected. What are your thoughts on the contract?
Well, I don't think you can ever compare it to what another guy's making that's not nearly the same age.
Sure.
That's number one. The contracts in pro sports are not paid sometimes based on what you just did the past season. And as you said, Ersson played obviously a lot more games in the NHL than Fedotov, who's only started one and appeared in three. You see it all over. You see guys on teams, great players, and there's a guy that, because he was an unrestricted free agent, is getting paid way more than a way better player. So you can't, like, kind of compare that. But first and foremost, I mean, the term I used when I talked about it on Flyers Daily was, I get the sticker shock. Like, I get it. Like, you see, like, you go to buy a car, right? You go, I like this car, you know? Nice. No, probably not. It's not superstar. Like, it's not the greatest car in the world, but pretty nice. And the guy goes, you go, how much? And the guy goes, $39,000. You're like, what? Right? You're like, I thought 21, you know? I'm good there. 39? Like, you're a little out of control with the ask. And I get it. There is sticker shock here because, you know, we've only seen the guy play, you know, portions of three games in the NHL. His numbers were not good. He didn't look good. But I also kind of say, like, if you judge him on the one start and two appearances this year, and you're just going to make your mind up on that, I think you're a fucking idiot. First of all, he came into a situation that was a total gong show. It was a mess, right, at that time. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that came from a league. Granted, it's the same sport. One's the Continental Hockey League, one's the National Hockey League. But they are almost different sports, the way that position is played. And I tried to caution people. A lot of people told me I was an idiot and didn't know what I was talking about when I was talking about making that adjustment when they first announced he was coming over and the equipment and everything else. It's all a factor. I'm telling you right now, he's talked about it with me. It is a factor, and it's a different game, and he's got a lot of adjustment to do. But the sticker shock of 3.25, people go, well, why'd you have to pay him that? You know, was he going to get that elsewhere? I don't know, maybe, if he went to open market. He is a well-thought-of international goltender, but we'd have no clue what he's going to do in the North American game. And while he's got size, that size can be an impediment. So I get the sticker shock, and I have a lot of skepticism about him as well. because I don't know that at 27 going on 28, that's your developmental years to develop into a new league. Mm-hmm. And his movement, you know, the way he moves in the net, there were some things that I looked at and said, eh, I don't know. He's going to have to be way more explosive and a lot less noisy in his movements. Arms are too far off his body. So there's a lot to learn, and I have a lot of skepticism, but that was the price to do business to get him over here. You are not going to get him over here to pay him $775,000 and play in the AHL. He wasn't coming.
No.
And given the situation that went down with Hart, it's only a 2-year contract. So you go, if it works, great. And that'll be a decent deal. If it doesn't, then who cares? We tried. We're trying to get this guy here for what seems like, I am giving you the longest answer in the world, eternity, right? And then he finally gets here, and part of the deal to get him here, I'm sure, I bet you that contract was negotiated before he even stepped on North American soil. Uh-huh. And that's what it took to get him here. And I think some people just like to complain about it. But I get the sticker shock. I'm not disagreeing. And I don't know that he is an NHL goalie, a starter or a backup. I don't know that. So I understand it. I got to move my incense a little bit. It's choking me out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it was more than I expected too, but it's a 2-year deal.
I thought 2.25. That's where I was. I was 2.25, 3-year deal. They ended up going 3.25, 2-year deal. So,
and he wanted, I think what I read was he wanted more years, and they ended up giving him more money instead. Did you see that? Okay.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but that makes sense to me. You know, players in the NHL, especially a guy that's not proven, what does he want? Term.
Right.
They all want term, especially when you're 27. You want more term. And I think the reason why they came to the agreement on the 2 years is this. One, they up the AAV. They can do that right now because they're only paying Arison 1.7. So they're still well below on, you know, their allocation to the position. B, when his contract is up in 2 years, if he's proven himself, he's 29. He's not 30. So that, I think that's a big element for him. We'll pay you more, give you less term. That mitigates some of our risk to tie to you for a longer period of time. And because we do have other guys coming. You have Zavragin, you have Kolosov, you have Carson Bjarnason, you have some other options there too. So, you know, let's, you know, make a short-term commitment here to each other. We don't have to get married. This isn't a lifetime deal. But let's see if we like each other in 2 years, and then we can commit longer if we like each other still.
Yeah, and that was the biggest part for me. And for me, they could have paid him $5 million for the next 2 seasons. Not that I would have wanted that, and I probably would have bitched a little bit, but it's 2 years.
Yeah, I would have kind of flipped out at that.
Yeah, but you know,
Danny on that one.
You know what I mean? Now, like, it's 2 years. Like, they're not going to be winning any Stanley Cups in the next 2 years. I'm not going to go as far as to say they're going to take a step back next season even, but, you know, we have to remember, hey, this is still, even with the success they had this year, it's supposed to be still rebuilding years, right? So 2 years for you know, a guy that I assume, and I want to talk about this too, is going to be splitting starts with Ersin, you know, the next 2 seasons, maybe they have that guy, hopefully, right? And at best, who knows? Maybe he turns out to be a top 15, 20 guy that maybe they can rely on or something. I did want to talk a little bit about how do the starts end up shaking out now? And, you know, I want to look at things from maybe Ersin's point of view as well, right? Because he's a younger guy. I'm sure you've talked to Ersin, you know, a lot more than I've been able to. I've only been able to be around him in the interview scrum down up in for the outdoor game. And, you know, my impressions were this is a mature kid, heads on straight. You know, he's kind of learning on the fly here, but not learning on the fly, but he's taking things as they come, you know. And so with this whole situation, how might that affect him? He's 24 years old. You know, this Fedotov guy comes over, you know, after everything he's been through, he comes over, he plays 3 games, and all of a sudden he's making $2 million more than I am. You know, what's my plan here? Do you think the Flyers are communicating with Ersin here? Like, hey, this is what we're doing. Or do you think, you know, that you're still just a player? We don't really need to tell you what we're doing. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think they communicate a lot to the players. They don't communicate everything. But they are very transparent. kind of mindset front office mm-hmm. that does communicate those things. And look, I'm sure that Sam Harrison wasn't shocked like we were that all of a sudden Fedotov's coming over. I'm sure he knew. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first I had heard, I thought the Fedotov ship had sailed.
So did I.
The double IHF ruled, and it was like, okay, that's all gone now, okay. It's just not going to happen, right? And I had taped an interview with Danny, and after the interview, we were just talking, and I just said to him, I said, you know, it was before the deadline. You look at any veterans to bring in here to supplement with Sam? You know, what are you thinking next year? You know, we're just talking. And he told me that he is more of the mindset to not bring in the veteran backup, something that I've sanctioned quite a bit, to have two guys that are younger and trying to get the net to push each other. It's the competition for the net drives better play and more urgency. And if you have a young goaltender with like a Brian Elliott that's here, you know Moose is not taking your job, you know? So there's a comfortability in that. So Danny was more of the, I want to have two younger guys driving. And he mentioned to me the Russians. And I said, Kolosov? And I said, well, Zavragin's way off it. And that's when he told me Fedotov was still an option. I said, huh? Wait. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. You're not going to just drop that and we're going to move on.
And how long ago was this?
It's probably about a month before he got here. So
wow.
And it didn't get out there. Nobody knew anything. And I was still skeptical because there was a lot of hurdles they were still trying to overcome. So when it happened, I was like, whoa, it did happen. I didn't think it would. When you got that point in the season, I didn't think it would happen that late, you know, even mm-hmm. though his season had ended. And I thought it would take a summer to negotiate that exit from Siaska, but it didn't. So I was stunned in that regard. But I think the mindset is for those two. But going into next year, who's the starter? I don't know. They'll determine that. I think you let those two battle it out. When one's playing better than the other, it gets the net more. And you're going to have a balance. You're not going to go every other game, but you might at points. And if a guy goes on a heater, you're going to ride the heater in 6 out of 8 games. And if he cools off, then the other guy, if he goes on a heater, he's going to get 6 out of 8. Is it going to be allocated 41-41? I doubt it. Somebody will kind of grab it. I was really impressed with the way Sam finished. Mm-hmm. Because, Jim, I will tell you, he was a babe in the woods. He was lost. His game was lost for a while. Mm-hmm. And I always say that goaltending does not happen in a vacuum. What's in front of you will drag good goaltending down. Me and Bill talk about this a lot. Good goaltending will be dragged down by bad structure, and bad goaltending will drag down good structure. It's just the way it is. They mm-hmm. have to go hand in hand. And when the Flyers became a team that was not a transition offense team after Walker got traded and some of the injuries and the way they were playing, they were shortening the ice for the opposition. They were giving up more on the rush. Other teams were obtaining the zone. They were defending more. And everything kind of broke down. And that's why we saw the play that we saw. And we saw after the gauntlet, the struggles. To me, that was everything kind of coming to roost at the same time. Mm-hmm. And Sam didn't look good. It's not just his numbers that weren't good. He was not playing well. And he wasn't bailing his team out. He wasn't giving them a chance. And the team wasn't helping him either. It was kind of going, you know, two and two together. And I really worried about him finishing the season like that and what that does to him mentally going into next year. But the way he battled back in the Ranger game, and coincidentally, they protected the living shit out of the middle of the ice.
Yeah,
they scored 4 goals on transition. Like, they kind of all come together, right? And then he gets a 1-0 shutout over the Devils. And if I'd have told you a week before that he was capable of handling a 1-0 shutout in a must-win game, you'd have checked me into an insane asylum because there was no way. He looked small. His body language was sagging. He was playing deep in his net. All the things that made him successful, he was not doing. And you could just see it from afar that he wasn't the same goalie. But I love the way he battled back in those last 3 games. So he can take that into the offseason. What is he at the NHL? I have no clue. I really don't. I think it's
that was going to be my next
the biggest question,
question
mark. going into next year's goaltending. Huge question. They have a great prospect pool, but I don't know where it is next year.
So it's crazy how fast things can change, right? Like for the longest time, it's, you know, Carter Hart's the next coming, right? He's going to be the franchise guy. Yeah. And
to Bernie Parent, the heir apparent. Took a little while.
It's crazy how fast things can kind of get turned on their head here. And, you know, but if we try to look ahead a little bit, they have a nice little pipeline, right? They're paying two guys. I don't think they're making over $5 million combined between Dotov and Enerson. Right, they're each on 2-year deals, so it's kind of like, hey, who wants to be here long term, right? And let's just assume this is how it plays out. You know, Urson ends up being the guy. He's the younger one of the two. He'll be 26, 27, I think, after the next two seasons. Fedotov, I don't know. Let's pretend he doesn't work out. You have Kolosov now come up. Now you're paying Kolosov and Urson, I would assume, around, you know, $5 million again. Right. So now you got Kolosov.
If Harrison's the number one, you're not paying him less than $5 million alone.
Right. Okay. Sure. All right.
So now you're at 7.5.
Yeah. Let's say rising cap world. Yeah. So it's, you know, still not terrible. You know, I don't know about a lot of people, but some people think Kolosov will be better than Ersan. So, you know, in a way, they can keep doing this thing back and forth here. And then you have Zavrajan over in Russia who, I think I just read Moscow now wants to find a way to get him transferred to the team, and then they're going to send him to Sochi.
Yeah, Sochi, yeah.
So he's another guy coming up, and you know, they have you can kind of see a pathway here to where they don't need to be spending a lot of money at the goaltender position, you know, potentially for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And this is just me assuming that's how it all works out. And at the same time, hey, you never know. Maybe one of these guys turns out to be the guy, which I think I would prefer, to be honest, you know. But what do you think?
I think that's like the Flyers at the end in that last game going against Washington. You needed a lot of things to go your way to get in. That's a lot of things to go your way to play that out long in real time.
That's like really, perfect scenario, yeah.
Yeah, it's why I think you draft a goalie every year, and whether it's in the second round, the fifth round, whatever, anywhere in between, because it is a hard position to portend what the future will be. And what it'll be at the NHL level. So I think a good hit rate on a really good goaltender, you know, I'm not talking about top five, top three in the league, like a Hellebuck or a Price in his heyday or anything like that. I'm talking about Jacob Markstrom or Thatcher Demko, you know, really good goaltenders. Not a Vasilevskiy's a Hall of Famer, you know. So those guys, a hit rate of about 20%, one out of every five picks, to me is a good hit rate.
Okay.
When it comes to that position, which is why I think you take one every year, because then you have a pipeline. If you hit on that, you always have a pipeline coming. But, I mean, I don't know who's going to develop. You can't.
Right.
Some guys are great at lower levels. Bobrovsky wasn't even drafted. He came over and is an animal still. And then you look at other guys that come in and, you know, they're not well thought of, but they've snap to it at the NHL. Like Connor Hellebuck's a great example. He's a self-made goalie. He's the best goalie on the planet right now. So you just don't know how those guys are going to develop because so much of it is not measured in speed or strength or anything like that. It's all between the ears. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what a guy's going to be like that playing in the NHL, which is the most unforgiving league in the world. Couple that with what's in front of him again. You know, I think development of goaltenders and a rebuilding team goes hand in hand. If you want to tank, give me a goalie that can't stop anything. And if you want to not develop a goalie, put a really shitty structure in front of them and watch them just get eaten alive. So the two have to go hand in hand in tandem. So, and I think that, like, people are still saying to me, oh, the Flyers need to lose on purpose. And that is just going to put an infection inside the organization. You're asking guys like Tippett, Frost, Cates, Forster, I mean, on down the line, Urson, Fedotov, you're asking them all not to progress. Mm-hmm. And, like, how can you think that's a good way to do things? I know some teams that have pseudo-tanked and got rewarded, like the Penguins. But that was 2004 and 2005. That's not today's NHL. The teams that did it more recently, the Oilers, haven't won dick all. The Leafs, they're going to get bounced in the first round again. They haven't beaten the Boston Bruins since 1959, 65 years. Buffalo hasn't made the playoff. They just hired Lindy Ruff. Like, what are they doing? Like,
oh, my God, what a joke that was.
You can't lose on purpose. And I know Chicago did it, and they got Bedard. We'll see if they can build a team around him. Because by the time he's ready to win, they're going to be paying him $14 million a year. Can you build a team now around that guy in a salary cap world? So there's a lot of variables to it. I don't know what the goaltending future is. It seemed like it was Hart. It's obviously not. But where it goes from here, it's going to be like sands to the hourglass. I have no idea.
So I totally agree. Another thing that I'm not sure people consider.
Real quick on Kolesov.
Yeah, sure.
Like him and Fedorov couldn't be more different. They're both, one's a Belarusian, one's Russian. But Fedorov is 6'7", 215. Kolesov's 6 foot. He's listed at 6 foot, which means he's 5'10", 5'11". He's like UC Saros small. So they're going to play the position totally different. Who benefits from that? Everybody goes, well, give me the size. Well, if you can't move side to side, it doesn't matter. And if you can move side to side, but you're not big enough, it doesn't matter. So that's the thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic plays out, too.
That's going to be fun. I haven't seen Kolesov play yet, so I'm itching to watch him play. Not that I know what I'm looking at anyways with goals. Is he starting Friday?
I don't know if he's starting Friday. I should take Lappy and ask him, but I know he got a game. They'll probably go with Cal Peterson. He's played well lately. He got the shutout and the clincher. And Lappy, I was texting with Ian LaPerriere yesterday and had some really good things to say about him, about Kolesov. So doesn't speak a lot of English, but he's a real good kid, hard worker. So that's good.
Did he mention anything about Rizzo? By any chance, I don't know if you're allowed to say. I'm putting you on the spot there.
I didn't even ask him about Rizzo yet. I mean, he's trying to.
I know
he's
not in the
him.
Lineup tonight. I was kind of curious to see if they would play him, but I mean, he hasn't been with them long enough to really know what's going on. I don't think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot. Like, I know a lot of people are really high on Rizzo. It's good numbers collegiately. He's one of those players that is likely going to be a really good college player, but not nearly as good of a pro. You see the opposite sometimes too, right? Yeah. You see some guys at lower levels, and as they level up, they just keep, they go way beyond. You go, now how did this guy only score 16 goals here? Because the NHL, you score 35, right? It's because of structure and playing with talent and those kind of things. Some guys are built that way, and some guys are the invert of that.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. He was a late bloomer. I agree with you. Like what he's good at, but to play in the NHL, there's so much other things that he needs to improve on. You know what I mean? Like he can put up points in college and he's got how do I say this? Top six skills with a not great work ethic. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, so you can't really put him on the fourth line because he doesn't have the fourth line skills. Does that make sense?
You have to have a fourth line mentality too, right?
Right.
You know, like Alan McCauley is a great example. I just brought up his numbers. I remember when I was talking to him, I wrote this up to him. In the AHL, in Alan McCauley's second to last year for the Ottawa 67s, in 55 games, he had 34 goals, 48 assists, 82 points. In his last year in the OHL, in 50 games, he had 56 goals and 56 assists. Like this guy at the O was a dynamo, right? An offensive dynamo. He gets to the NHL. He played almost 500 games. He scored 69 goals. He had to develop, and he's not a big guy, 5'11", 200 pounds. He had to find a way to be able to even play close to 500 games in the NHL and change everything and become a checker, you know? And had to. Some guys aren't willing to do that, you know? To survive in the NHL, they know how to play the game with offensive risk. They can't defend, and they don't have that willingness to defend or the mindset to do it. So that's like, I mean, you see a guy like Alan McCauley, and you see those numbers, 56 goals in 50 games, 56 assists. You go, this guy at the NHL is going to score. But he said the NHL, he couldn't beat the goalies. You know what I mean? Yep. Everything was so much better, and he had a hard time getting the spots at his size. And so I think it's a really interesting thing to look at when you see prospects coming up.
Yeah, and we'll see. So, like, what I try to do is I try to temper expectations with prospects this way. Because I feel like once fans get their hopes up on a guy. Like, you see his seventh round pick the Flyers got from Carolina, and he's putting up all kinds of crazy numbers in college. It's very easy to see the numbers and go, oh, if we can just, you know, get this guy as a center and bring him up to the Flyers right away. But it's like, you got to watch this guy a little bit, because, you know, he likes offense. He likes to play offense, and really he's not that great at a lot of other things. So you never know. Maybe they toss him in the AHL with the Phantoms and Lappy gets him going a little bit down there. You know, maybe that changes, you know.
Yep. He's going to have – it's like look at Frost is a great example. I mean, he's a first-round pick, right? Mm-hmm. Huge numbers up in junior. And then he got to the NHL, and he had no idea how to defend. Why? Because he never defended. He always had the puck.
Exactly.
I mean, it was like – if he didn't have the puck, one of his linemates had the puck. They just controlled everything, so he had no clue. And there's a process to that, and you got to learn. And you know, one of the things about a lot of sports fans today is we like to do two things. They like to anoint a guy way before he's earned it, and they like to tear him down right before, way before he's shit the bed. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's this dichotomy of, oh, this guy's – just get him here. Let him play the kids. And then when they play the kids and they get their shit pushed in, they go, what are they doing? You know, like
– he's a boss. Yeah.
Yeah, like Brink in that Canadiens game, that shift that he put in. I know you put out the tweet.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy, I would have had a serious – if I was coaching that team, and I'm sure Torts did, I'd have had a serious conversation about the eye in the sky. Like, that thing doesn't lie. Bobby, like – this isn't just a bad shift and maybe you're whatever. You can't ever put that on film.
No.
Not at this level. I was stunned when he played the next game.
So was I. I didn't think he was going to play the rest of the year, to be honest. And, you know, maybe that's a little bit much, but that was embarrassing, man.
It was bad.
I know the game was out of hand. And, hey, I get, you know, maybe
that's where you learn about guys
at that point, but it's like, holy shit, man. Like, you can't, like... that's everything that they're trying to get rid of. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it was encapsulated in that one 33-second screenshot.
Yeah,
here's
the
thing.
It's talk, but...
evaluating guys and evaluating players and their mentality and their compete level, you can do that when the team's winning and doing well to a degree, but you learn way more when the shit hits the fan.
100%.
You know, like with your friends and coworkers, when the shit hits the fan... you learn way more about those people that are in your foxhole with you than 100%. When things are going nice and swimming and sales are good and all that crap, right?
Because it's easy when it's going good.
Yeah, yep. It's easy. I mean, you show up. It's fun. Hey, we're breaking balls, you know, the whole thing. And then all of a sudden, shit, it's the fan. Guys start pointing, blaming you. You know, you're like, blame me. Fuck you. You didn't back check. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. You see that eye in the sky? I saw your shift. You know, if I was a player on that team, I'd have handed him his ass. If I was the goalie, I'd have handed him his ass.
I mean, somebody had to say something. I mean, I'm sure there was more than one guy on that shift. It just happened to be Brink. I mean, you know, three guys went to I forget who it was. I think Suzuki, like, did a no-look pass, and that's how they ended up scoring, and all three guys went to Suzuki. So it wasn't just Brink, but... you know, the whole chain of events started because he was late getting into the zone. Once the puck went the other way, he basically walked back to play defense. And, the whole thing was crap, but I was just stunned by that. I remember I shared the tweet in the group, and I think some of my guys were a little bit stunned too because the response was, well, Brink's pretty slow. And I'm like, no. You have to see this play because it's not about him being a slow skater. It's you completely... dogged it on this play. Either he
gave
up, he's dead beyond belief, and I think what happened is he overstayed a shift, which is what got him in trouble earlier on in the season.
Yep.
So it's like, to me, that's
when
like Torts
tore him a new one in that one
through.
Game. Yeah, when Torts tore him when he got to the bench is because he had a chance to change in the second period with the long change, and he didn't. He got caught out, and when you get caught out and you're dead, you can look really bad. That shift in the Montreal game, though, I don't think he was out there more than 40 seconds. So that was where I had the problem with it. Look, players got to police it, you know? And you got to be, like, as a goalie, like, I don't know how many times, I didn't play in the NHL. I don't know how many times I've walked into a locker room after a game as a goalie and said, guys, if you had scored 7 tonight, I'd have given up 8. You know what I mean? If you just scored 12, I'd have given up 13. You were not going to win with me tonight. I sucked. You got to own it. You got to fall on it and own it. And you can't just, they can't be words. You got to really take ownership of it. And I'm sure that there was a lot of that policing going on after that and at several points throughout the final part, but they didn't turn on each other. So that is good. You can have those conversations. Look, not everybody on the team has to like each other. There's this portion of the younger end of sports fans right now that think that everything's got to be butterflies and blossoms in a locker room between players and a coach. They see a fight in practice and they go, oh my God, the team is, that guy's got to be true. No, that's fine. Those things are fine. You're not going to always agree. It doesn't have to be. It's better when things are on the razor's edge.
Right.
And guys are getting pissed off at each other in practice for giving me a whack on the hands or whatever it is. That's fine. It doesn't mean divorce. You can fight like your best friend growing up. You can beat the shit out of each other. And then after you hug it out, that's fine. It does not mean that everything has to be imploded because there's guys getting, you know, extra intensity. That's a good thing.
I mean, you would assume that whatever it's on the table, whatever the issue is, instead of, you know, going to so-and-so and you start creating clicks and, you know, getting all weird, whatever the issue is, it's
confront
out
it.
There. So confront it. Yeah. So I want to welcome my co-host Jack into the show. Jack, how are you?
I'm doing good. It was a great conversation. Sorry I'm late.
Yeah, it's okay. We just have Jason here. Jace, I know we asked you for a half hour. We're a couple minutes over.
We got a little more time.
Okay. So we kind of almost touched on some exit interview stuff here, and we were talking about Bobby Brink. He mentioned, you know, what he's going to work on over the summer. He's going to work on, you know, his physical. So he's going to try to get bigger in the gym, it sounded like. He's going to work on his conditioning. That's great. I guess the next guy on my list that I wanted to talk about was Joel Farabee, who, you know, kind of faded down the stretch. And, you know, some of the responses that he gave during that press conference I thought were a little odd, Jace. And, you know, I kind of want to get your thoughts and opinions there. If you need me to bring up some quotes, I can, just to be a little bit more specific. But,
yeah,
you know,
hit me with the quote. So
yeah,
we can
sure.
React to that one specifically.
Yeah, so I think
I agree. There was some kind of like, whoa, to me.
Yeah, like head scratchers. Like, oh, I don't know if I would have said that. Like, sometimes no answer is the best answer. So one that he gave was good. We set a standard on how we need to play and how we need to win in the league, which is great. There was another one where I think somebody asked him about his lack of production. And, you know.
Down the stretch.
Something, yeah, down the stretch. And something that he said more than once, which kind of irked me. Like, the first time I thought it slipped out. The second time he said it, I'm like, all right, so this is an actual thing. He mentioned that the games get harder down the stretch, and it almost sounded like he was using that as an excuse for, hey, that's why my production dipped off. Obviously, I don't have the whole quote. I just have here a summarized answer on lack of production down the stretch. The games get harder. When you hear that coming from, you know, one of the, like, Joel Farabee is one of those players, he's good away from the puck, I think. You don't have to really worry about him. So in a way, I think, maybe we excuse his lack of production sometimes, but he's also counted on for offense. And yes, he had, you know, he broke career. He had career highs in, I think, almost every offensive category. But, you know, the last two and a half months, he was a ghost offensively. I'm curious your thoughts on Farabee. And I think Elliot Friedman even mentioned him in a 32 Thoughts that he might watch like a guy like Farabee this summer. And to me, I took it as the Flyers could be exploring a trade. Like, your thoughts on Farabee from his, you know, lack of production to his exit interview to what Friedman potentially said.
Well, first of all, with Friedge, I don't think Friedge ever mentions anything without having heard it somewhere else. He just doesn't come to that conclusion on his own. So to me, that sounds to me like, I can't confirm it because I haven't talked to Friedge, but it sounds to me like he heard that from someone. And when you look at the numbers down the stretch, I mean, they are pretty glaring. They're pretty jarring because he was a guy, I remember talking about him in, you know, at like the midway point of the season and saying he's a guy that is showing up on the score sheet virtually every night. I think he'd only gone back-to-back games two times. We had a three-game drought and a five-game drought. But other than that, he wasn't going back-to-back games without a point up until like the first 48 games of the season. But then the final 34, he had 5 goals and 5 assists and 10 points. It was a minus 24 and actually had a little bit more ice time. So you look at that and you go, okay, when the games got tough, and again, this goes back to that evaluation, Jim, where you're going, okay, we can evaluate guys in October, November, December, and January, and that's a very different NHL because as you get post-Christmas, things start to tighten up. Coaching, scoring's always up in the beginning, you know, because teams aren't defending every inch, and as things kind of funnel towards the end, it gets tighter and tighter. Is he a guy that is built for that? And when you look at his numbers and 50 points and a high in 22 goals and, you know, setting a career high with 28 assists, you go, okay, he took a step forward. But what do we have here? Do we have a guy that's going to put up nice numbers, but then when it's crunch time and when the rubber meets the road, isn't going to be able to deliver that? Because if we're going to pay a guy on his numbers, he's got to be able to deliver it consistently.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the valuation, which is something that I asked Torts about specifically, because he said it at one point in one of his press conferences, a couple guys that just don't get it. And I think he was referring to Farabee, as sure as I'm sitting here. And I said, is that something they can learn? Is that something you can coach into them, how to play in these kind of games? And he said, yes. We weren't talking about Farabee specifically, but just a player in that situation in a generalization. But again, you got to look at it and go, okay, with Farabee, you look at this situation with the player and you go, okay, I got a left winger that may have decent value on the market because he does have good numbers. He's young. He's on a very palatable contract. Can I use that player? Joel just, I think, turned 24. Can I use that player to fill a need in combination with another asset, like a first-round pick, and try and get a center or whatever you're going to try and do? So I think he is a piece that they will get calls on. There may be a piece that they place calls on because of how he finished down the stretch. I mean, the numbers do not lie in this situation. Slightly more ice time and significantly less production. So, like, I gave you those numbers in his final 34 games. Let me give you the games, the first 48 games before that, where things didn't tighten up. So the first 48 games of the season, Joel Farabee, he played 16:02, he played 16:45, average time on ice. In those 48 games, he had 40 points and was a plus 11. Like, that
it's pretty
disparity
damn good.
Is pretty nuts, right? 17 goals, 23 assists, 40 of his 50 points in the first 48 games, and only 10 the rest of the way.
Incredible.
It leaves some question marks, there's no doubt about it. And the eye test showed it as well.
Yeah, at times, you forgot that he was playing, and this is a guy that they need for off, like, they need his offense. There's no other way to go about it. Like, they need Farabee producing points, you know. So and I he was hurt last year, so we all kind of gave him that year, and he played the whole 82, and you know, he did more than I think most of us expected. Came out this year, and he was an easy pick for, you know, breakout season, I think. Yep. And he was doing that. And then, like we're talking about, at some point, he hit some kind of a wall, you know? Yeah. And that's what I was trying to figure out, what changed. And to
is
hear
the player
him say,
hitting the wall, or is the wall hitting the player, you know?
Right. And so to hear him say the games got tougher blew my mind. Because it's how can you say that?
Yeah. like I thought Couturier, like, sometimes how you say things and when you say them is very important. Like, Couturier at one point, maybe it was after the Columbus game when he said it, they lost 6-2, and he said, I don't think we played bad. And I go, well, okay, you actually didn't. You lost 6-2, but you didn't play bad. You outplayed them. You just couldn't get a save. Mm. But that's not the time to verbalize that. You know what I mean? Like, let's not, you know, you got to look at the result and consider, take the temperature of the room sometimes. And I think that kind of what Farabee said kind of goes in that same vein.
So this is the last quote from Farabee here. He mentioned, whatever role I'm given, I just try to do the best of my ability. And doesn't that kind of point out, like, hey, like, you know, if I'm playing third, fourth, you know, second, first. He's not getting power play time, right? So obviously his points might take a hit there. But doesn't that kind of say, like, you know, you should ask my coach.
Using me properly. Yeah.
Right.
It told me, hey, the coach is, you know, you can't expect me to go out there and produce when I'm playing with Nick Delarie. You know
right.
what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, that's what he's saying there, yeah. And the coach is going, well, what'd you do to earn it? I mean, first of all, if you can't crack this power play, Jesus Christ. I mean, what a gong show. But.
Well, that's a conversation, I think, right there. Like, is Farabee that bad of a PP guy? Or, like, why isn't he getting the power play minutes? You know, this was, I think, a
power
conversation.
Power plays all earned in effort and those things. And you know, that first 48 games, let me see what he had. I mean, he had in those first 48 games, he didn't have any power play goals.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much power play time he got on PP2. I don't. I mean, I don't think they can make power play goals from anybody. But, yeah, I mean, power play is one of those things that's all earned. Every player wants it. But you've got to earn it. And sometimes, yeah, just pure skill is going to get you there. But on a team that was rotating everybody and the usher at section 117 in on the power play, it's pretty stark.
So let me, I'm going to put you on the spot and you could tell me, because you're around these guys, I think you see personalities and whatnot. Does Farabee come off as a guy that would, you know, get along with towards, who can I compare him to? Like, you know, Torts has his guys, right? Like, we all know that. And I say that in a positive way because I don't think it's a negative. Every coach has his guys, you know?
Like, Garnet Hathaway is a Torts guy.
Sure.
You know?
Does Farabee come off like, you know, he's a guy that would, you know, if Torts is going to say something, is Farabee a guy that's going to go, okay, I'll take this into consideration, or, you know, this frigging guy, I can't believe he's still in the league kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think you can do both of those things. I think you can say, Jesus, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah.
And then, but what you do with it is all that matters, and go, mm-hmm. you know, fuck him. I'll show him, and I'll work my bag off. And that perception that he's verbalizing, I don't even know if he really believes it, but he's doing it to try and motivate me. So here mm-hmm. you go, stick it in your ass. So I think I don't think that's a bad thing. I will say that I thought. It was one of the things I've talked about on Flyers Daily when Torts first got here. I thought that Joel Farabee would be a guy that Torts really liked.
Yeah.
Because, you know, prior to Torts getting here, he was a guy that killed penalties, showed a lot of will in that regard, scores a lot of his goals right around the blue paint, goes there, and will take a beating. He's not the biggest guy in the world, Farabee, for sure. So I thought that those two would be very eye-to-eye on the way the game is played. But I will say that, you know, I think it's an issue with U.S. national team development programs and USA Hockey. And you guys know me. Like, I've coached in USA Hockey for almost 30 years. And I think there's an entitlement issue. And I think you see it with USNTDP players and American players that are playing at very high levels. I think there's a lot of entitlement there all of a sudden. And, like, I look at, you know, guys all over the NHL that have it. I think Trevor Zegers has it. There's a lot of entitlement there. And that isn't by accident that those guys share – a lot of those guys share that trait. It was something I was really worried about with Cam York because he was so chill, so laid back, that there was a lot of entitlement there. There was a lot of confidence. But then I saw what he did this year, and I'm like, Jesus, this dude's a fucking killer. You don't have to say anything, but he's a killer. And he's way better than I thought he was. Like, not a little bit, a lot better than I thought he could be. So I don't know if that's there – with Farabee, you know, I don't coach him every day, but it is something that I always look at when I see some of those players that kind of went that route.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe I get, and you explained it pretty well. He's almost like too cool for school, or it's like, you know, he knows the game, right? Like, Torts is going to try to get in my ass to, you know, get me to, mm-hmm. you know, play tougher to prove him wrong, and he strikes me as the guy that's just like, I'm not going to play that game. You know, I'm going to go about things my way. And
well, there was
that's just
that
my
happened.
Impression.
Remember when he got benched? He played two shifts in the one game, played 57 seconds, and then he worked mm-hmm. the door the rest of the night mm-hmm. and worked the door and was a positive presence on the bench. Didn't pout about it. I thought that was a really big step. And, you know, like, it's hard for a guy. It's embarrassing for a player that at that time was second in the team in scoring and playing two shifts and Torts said after the game, why didn't he play the rest of the game? He said, because he didn't listen. And I remember the exact play Sean Walker goes forward and Farabee doesn't read the play and cover the middle of the ice, and they go down and they get a two-on-one and they get scored on. And that was an issue at that time. Guys reading the play, they want their defensemen coming forward at the blue line to keep pressure into the zone, but the highest forward, F3, has got to read it and coil back to the middle of the ice and start backing out of the zone. And he didn't. He kept going forward into a dead area of the ice, and that's what Torts was talking about. But I thought Joel handled it well. So it is. There's some things that, like, some contradictions kind of in the whole equation for me. But I think he's a player that will be listened on this summer.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the perspective I have too. They said they're going to be looking for, you know, potential hockey trades, and he was one of the first guys that came to mind for me. Was Farabee. He's still young enough to where you can do a one for one or whatever it ends up being. You get something good in return. They have a lot of wingers, you know, not a lot of centers and top pair D. But so
they do,
yeah,
have one top pair D. I know that Cam York's a top pair D.
You think he is for sure?
What he showed me this year, like, do you see how that guy defended all year?
I did. He was impressive, and you know,
unbelievably good. Like, the way he defends players off the rush is elite. It's not good. It's elite because he's such a good skater and never gets himself off balance. Blocks. I would think he blocked more shots in the first 20 games of the season I thought he'd block in his career, based on what I thought he was as a player. Me and Torts talked about it. I said, is there enough dog in there? Is there enough compete in there? He goes, I don't know. But if there's not, he's going to always leave us wanting more. Boy, did he show a shit ton of compete. He is an absolute gamer. He is a way better defender than I would have ever thought he could have been. And he is still young. Like, I think he is going to get better. I think he's built the way he approaches the game to be able to handle 25 to 28 minutes a night because he never gasses himself completely. You see those D all over the league that play, you know, 25, 28 minutes a night, and they're never winded, right? Whether it's Hedman or there's always these guys, you're like, how do they play that much? Like, it's insane. Doughty is a guy that I've never seen breathe heavy, but he plays 28 minutes a night, the hardest minutes, because he just knows how to manage it. And I think, I'm not saying that Cam York is Doughty. Doughty's a right shot. Obviously, Cam's a left, but I think he's got serious chops. I really do.
I mean, he was impressive. You know, he was impressive.
To me, he's the best individual player story of the season.
Yeah,
I'm about to get a jersey after that. That was great.
Yeah, he won most improved. I am president of the Cam York fan club, and when I did my exit interview with him, I told him I didn't see this coming, dude. You know, like, I was honest with him. Like, he blew my mind with how well he defended this year. And I think there's more offense to come. We all thought that was going to be kind of the hallmark of his game because, you know, you see guys like McCarr or Quinn Hughes and so much offense from the blue line. But you got to learn how to defend first, and I think he's just so far ahead of where we thought he would be ever.
I would like to see him. I would like to see that. I mean, look, I'm on record saying I think he's a really good second pair guy, him and Sanheim.
If he's with the right side guy, I don't know. Sanheim's the right. Yeah, obviously, he's a left shot on the right side. I think he's just a top pair guy all day, every day, with the right guy there next to him.
Do you think York and Drysdale could be a top pair?
It's a little undersized.
Yeah,
it's the one thing I worry about. You know, York. Mm-hmm. Neither guy's obviously overly physical. I mean, Sanheim's not overly physical. He's a big guy, but he doesn't play a big, heavy brand of hockey. It's more finesse and predicated on skating. Mm-hmm. It is a little undersized. I'd like to see a little more size on the top pair.
Yeah.
And then you free up a guy like Drysdale on a second pair to be a little bit more offensive because his skating is pretty disgusting. Like, it's
it is.
He can – the way he moves with the puck sometimes, you know, backwards and laterally is like, whoa, man. It's just
it's
like
fun.
You watch it, you go, whoo, that looks different, right? Like, you see, like, Erik Karlsson in his heyday, the way he would move with the puck. And you'd be like, what is up with that? Like, who the fuck taught you that? You know? It's just like a gift. And you watch it, and you're just like, you just go, that doesn't look like skating. That looks like floating, you know? And, like, that's what, like, Drysdale skates like that. I'm not saying he's going to be Carlson. I mean, I hope he can defend better than Carlson. Jesus, that guy couldn't defend his way out of a wet paper bag. But
If he's going to score 80 points in a season, I don't care if he doesn't defend.
That doesn't matter. I don't care if he scores 80 points. He's still net negative. When the Flyers played the Penguins, I'll give you a good behind-the-scenes line I got from Torts. Whenever he'd walk in on Mondays when I tape him in this office in Skate Zone, and we have cameras and everything set up there. And I always try and, like, loosen him up, you know, when he comes in just to kind of see where he is mentally. Because they could be losing four straight games coming in one of those interviews. I don't know. And I remember the one time after they traded Wade Allison and he walked in, I said, he's going to east-west himself right out of this league. And he looked at me and goes, Allie? I go, yep. Because I did say that, didn't I? When they played the Penguins and they had that, it was the back-to-back games and the Flyers won the second one. And Carlson in that game was directly responsible for four goals against. He was hideous. I said to him, he walks in, I go, boy, it's a good thing Carlson played yesterday, huh? And he goes, he kept us in the game. That's the only reason we got the overtime is because he was out there. The shorthanded goal he gave up, he was hideous. You know, like the juice ain't worth the squeeze there in any way, shape, or form. But I thought that was funny.
I love it.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Jace, we have almost an hour. Jack, you have anything for Jace? We'll let him run.
No, yeah, it was a good conversation. I guess I'll ask, you kind of alluded to it. I want to know where you're at, Jason. You guys alluded to it all since I've joined about Farabee. It's very polarizing. We have holes. We have holes on this team that we don't know if we can fill with the draft picks we have. We have an abundance of wingers. I'm not saying it's the end of the line. The kid's only 24 years old, but do you almost feel like they have to make a move with one of their wingers, and Farabee makes the most sense, maybe with a package with a first round pick, because we're probably not filling our number one center need, or even potentially, I know how you feel about York, but I'm sure they're still looking at number one D as well, without moving a winger. Does this just make too much sense right now? And what do you think the odds are it happens this offseason?
I mean, I think there's a distinct probability. You know, Danny talked about their mentality and approach this offseason. Something I've been talking about for a month, and I hadn't talked to Danny prior to it, but like people kept, you know, what do they do in free agency this summer? You know, what's the next step? And to me, and Danny and I were kind of in total agreement here without even ever discussing it. To me, this is an offseason where you do not go big game hunting in free agency. And there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, the free agency class is not great. Number two, free agency is always premium money. This year's premium plus, maybe premium plus plus. And the reason why it is because it's the first time the cap's going up. So everybody's going to be eager to spend and start, you know, getting into that marketplace again, which tells me it's going to be premium plus plus, which is a little bit more expensive. And I don't think it makes sense to right now to get into the big game hunting in free agency. But I do think there's big game hunting to be done via trade, because I think that there's a lot of teams around the league that have not been able to reset their path, whether they have new general managers, new arc of development, arc of a rebuild, whatever it is. There's really good players that just are slightly out of timeline for certain teams. You know, you can look at teams like Buffalo, or you can look at Ottawa. You can look at, you know, teams all over the league and maybe identify some really good players that are 26 and maybe are coming up for a contract like Konechny in like the next year or so. And you go, okay, like that's a player that I might be able to get out of there. And I go, you know, I'll trade for him with 1 year left on his contract, and I'll make him love me and sign here. And he'll be a big part because I've identified that guy as a core piece. So I think you do go big game hunting in the trade market. And if you're going to go big game hunting, you're not going to stick your recycle bin outside and all of a sudden be delivered a gold bullion by the trade fairy. It doesn't work that way. You got to give up something to get something. So guys like Farabee have value. And the reason why he's got value, he's got good numbers. He's 24 and he's not getting paid a ton of money. And he fits a timeline for a team that maybe is on a slightly different timeline and you're trying to acquire their 25, 26, 27-year-old player. So, but again, you don't you're not looking to acquire 29-year-olds that are going to be declining in 2 years. This is a player that's going to help you now, help you in the next 3 years, and help you in the next 5 years. So, but you're going to have to give up something for that. You have the two first-round picks from last year with Miechkoff and Bonk. You have two this year, and then you have two next year. I don't think there any way all six of those first-round pick turns into picks from the Flyers. I think you use those as equity. We know how much – I mean, Jesus Christ, if only NHL GMs valued first-round picks, and they value them really high, as much as fans do. Holy fuck. You'd think a first-round pick was like a ray of like eternal happiness from the gods. Like, people love a first-round pick because they love the unknown. You know what I mean? I like the known. You know what I mean? Like, I go, this restaurant, brand new. It might be good. It might not be good. It's expensive as shit. But I go, I'll book the reservation at the restaurant that I know is good every time I go. You know what I mean? Absolutely. So I think that you use that organizational equity. Plus, obviously, the part that comes with a first-round pick, though, is cost fixation for a number of years. You're trusting your development staff and identifying what you need and all that. So, yeah, I think that he's absolutely in this conversation. I don't think there's a player on the team that if the secretary calls in or my assistant calls in and says, hey, so-and-so from so-and-so team's on the line, he wants to talk about possibly talking about a deal with player X. There's not one player that they're going to mention where I go, tell them I'm not here. I'm taking calls on everybody. Everyone. So I think everybody's in play, and Farabee as much as anybody else.
Fair enough.
And as much as I love York, like if you're going to give me, you know, something great, like I'm not trading Cam York for Trevor Zegras. Like, that'd be fucking idiotic. You know what I mean? But, and then this notion too, like, a lot of people are like, oh, you got to get Zegras. He's your top. He's your 1C. I don't even think he's a center.
That's what I say.
They see these guys from afar, but they don't see them, and they don't see that they're far from good. Like, I'm not saying Zegras isn't a talented player and can be a really good NHL player. Look at his numbers through the first 60 games of this year. He had 11 goals. Yeah. You know, like, come on. Like, he's got a lot of sizzle and all that. Like, but watch the player daily before you go, we got to get this guy. You know, he might be good. And under the right coaching and the right system and the right teammates and all, he might be great. But Jesus, let's really look at a guy instead of just looking at, you know, the ESPN highlights. We live in this YouTube world of highlights. I mean, Jesus Christ. Show me the fucking lowlights.
That's how
I want to know what the guy
sucks.
I'm
the same way, yeah.
I don't care what his ceiling is. I want to know what his basement is.
Yeah, ain't that the truth.
You know? Mm. So, anyway.
Well, I'm the same way with that. And I always say I'm anti-fun. But I want the basic stuff to be as good as, you know, the fun stuff, you know, like we could do the fun stuff after all the basic stuff is perfect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I go to a restaurant, I plunk down $1.50 at a nice steakhouse. Don't give me the sizzle. Give me a good steak.
Right.
Some sustenance. You know what I mean? Something I know that's going to give me what I need. Oh, this sizzle bullshit. Enough already. I mean, yeah, he scored two Michigan goals.
If we're getting a Michigan and there's nothing happening in between, you know, it's like, yeah, all right. Because it gives you a fun goal once in a while.
It's net. It's about being net positive players. Like I mentioned, Carlson. Like, it's great. Yeah, 80 points. Yeah, he's on the ice for 170 against.
That's why I was always.
Congrats. You know?
Yep. I hear you, man. That was one of my gripes with Ghost, who, you know, had a solid season this year with Detroit. But that was always one of my issues with Gostisbehere. Because,
People
put up 40-some points, but it's like, come on, man. How many times is he getting beat and the play is going the other way or whatever?
I had a Flyer goalie tell me that played behind him. When he was on the ice, it was like playing a man down in your own zone.
Jesus, man.
Kidding you.
I believe it. Just
like playing on the PK.
It always seemed like if it was a mistake, it always led to a scoring opportunity.
A big one.
If it was like a mistake and it was like, all right, he recovered, but it was always like, shit.
Well, there was these
always
like
a prime scoring
perceptions
chance.
Of him. Like find me a board battle he won, first of all. Never. Mm-hmm. It wasn't very strong. Number two, there was this perception he was this great skater. Okay. Where are you seeing that? Like, he wasn't, he was good laterally. And he was great at keeping pucks in. Like, I'll give him his full tilt there. He had a howitzer for a shot. Couldn't throw it in the fucking ocean from the edge of the beach. Mm-hmm. Could never hit the net. Had huge numbers, and he was a dramatic player. But he was a net negative player.
Yeah.
You got to put him out there with a guy that can defend the shit out of it.
Damn right he
simple
was.
Simple as that, man.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. 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 Other than
that, it was fun. A lot of fun. He's fun to watch.
He wasn't a fan of mine, but.
Okay. All right. Anyway. Well, shit, man, I could keep talking to you because, you know, you brought up Cam York and all this. And, yeah, Briere mentioned guys like Ginning, Addard, and Andre are going to be pushing to make the team. But we'll have to have you on again and keep you for another hour at some point over the summer, man.
That works. I'm around. Look, you guys know that, like, about me. Like I just love talking. Like, that's the thing that sucks about the season being over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, fuck, I went 209 days in a row putting out pot. Like, Saturday was the first day I didn't do. And I was like, man, like, this sucks. You know? Like, I wanted to keep it going. And this year was way different because, like, you go in the fridge, you look at the milk, oh, man, expiration date's tomorrow. I got to either drink this today or it's done, right? But you know when it's going to expire. In the last couple of years, you knew when this season was going to expire. April season, it's going to be over. There's no chance. Well, we found out on April 16th that it wasn't going to continue. So it was like this thud, even though so much had to go right. But I go through this a period of ever since I was a kid. I used to cry as a kid. I had the boombox behind my head. And when Gene Hart would say goodnight, good hockey, for the last time, I cried. Because there's only two. There's hockey season and off season. I fucking hate the off season because I need the structure of my life. And I go through this period of detaching from the season that happened. And then and then there's this little happiness period, which is probably going to end Friday. And then I start getting miserable that the new season's too far away.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm kind of there now. Like, probably after the first round.
How does the draft and the free agency keep you going? Does it only last for like a week less, and then you're right back to being
depressed?
It's
like Chinese food, right? Like, you eat it, you're full, and then 10 minutes later, you're hungry again. That's what it is. It's General Tso's chicken and lo mein. Then immediately I'm like, Jesus Christ, now we have August where everybody's at their cottage and there's nothing going on.
Nothing.
I can't even find a conversation at a Wawa about the game, let alone, you know, something real happening. So in August, I'm just my wife's like, you got to get the fuck out of the house. Like, August, you're talking to yourself and, you know, like, I'm bananas.
I love that about August. It's so true. I think one year teaming and had the blood clots, so they like brought in Delzato in August. I was bugging everybody. It's like, look, they did something. Somebody
look, they got
me.
Deli here. Yeah. Wasn't he trying to bang Lee San?
Oh my God. Holy cat. That's great.
She follows me on Twitter. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
She used to be our fantasy football expert when I was doing the show at Harry on the Fanatic.
Get the hell out, really?
She used to call in weekly. Yeah, she does all kinds of fantasy shows now.
She local?
No.
Huh?
She was friends with Tony Bruno. You follow me, man. So that's fantasy how we got her now as a weekly guest.
How about that? She know anything about fantasy hockey? I could use some help there.
I don't know.
All right. Well,
not
put
that
a word
I've seen.
In, I guess.
But then again, I'm not looking to her for fantasy hockey, I'll tell you that.
Oh, God.
Oh, shit.
All right, now Jace. We're off the rails, boys.
Yeah. We'll let you go, man. I appreciate you coming on. It was a last-minute ask. I appreciate you taking the time. Congrats on another great season, man. You're doing awesome things over there with the Flyers. We we all watch your stuff. Great interview with Fedotov. That was your latest one, right?
That was challenging. The English is getting better. He's still got a long ways to go, though.
Yeah.
But there's something that's really, like, charming about him. Like, there's something in there, some kind of personality or something, that once he gets more comfortable with the language, I think we're gonna dig out of him. So I'm looking forward to that, getting to know him a little bit better.
Yeah, that'll be good for him to have a summer here. I think I saw he's in Cancun already. Follow him on Instagram. So good for him taking some time off. Yeah. So awesome. All right, man. Well, let's link back up soon. Like I said, congrats on a great season. I'm sure we'll talk soon, and enjoy your off season, man. Have a good summer.
Awesome. Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
Thanks as always.
See you guys.